In a logo, a fishing bobber drops into a pool of blue water which reflects a crescent moon. Our view soars up into the sky where a boy sits on the moon's edge holding a fishing pole. Amid billowing clouds, we float past giant block letters. DreamWorks SKG. Now, destinations on an airport terminal's departure board read Copenhagen, Mexico City, Montreal, and more. The letters flip and new words read, DreamWorks Pictures presents The Terminal. Now our view scans a nearly empty arrival area. Two security officers lead dogs past a baggage carousel. As others man a row of security checkpoint booths, one connects two waist-high posts with a retractable belt. The belt reads U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Now an overhead view shows arriving passengers flooding into the terminal. At the security booths, officers check passports.
What's the purpose of your visit?
What is the purpose of your visit, business or pleasure?
What is the purpose of your visit, business or pleasure?
Just visiting. Shopping. A plaisir.
It's a pleasure.
Business.
How long will you be staying in the United States?
The officers stamp papers.
Could I see your return ticket, please?
What's the purpose of your visit?
Business or pleasure?
1 month.
Pleasure.
Enjoy your stay. Next.
In a surveillance room overlooking the security booths, a bespectacled official approaches a bank of monitors. A burly man in uniform joins him and uses a hand radio.
Stand by, he's fishing.
Copy that. See this bunch of Mickey Mouse sweatshirts down here?
That's a tour from China, connecting to Orlando.
When was the last time you saw a group of Chinese tourists on their way to Disney World? Not a single one of them had a camera.
Possible forged documents on 10 and 11.
Now guards chase the Chinese suspects through the crowd. As they pass one booth, a middle-aged arrivee at the window watches.
Sir? Sir? Passport?
A mustached officer checks his passport.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Navarsky. Purpose of your visit?
He places the passport on a scanner.
It's business or pleasure?
A message appears on the scanner. International passport failed. The officer's brow furrows as he eyes Navorsky's open passport. He picks up a phone receiver and dials.
Sir, I have an IBIS hit on 6.
Now the burly officer faces him.
Mr. Navorsky, please follow me.
Navorsky takes a planter's nut can and some other personal items and follows the burly officer to 4 of the waist-high posts.
All right, Mr. Navorsky, we would like for you to wait right here, please.
Now at the security booths, more passengers file through. At a luggage carousel, a man retrieves a heavy suitcase. Now people waiting in line stare as Navorsky shaves his chin with a cordless razor. He stands alone in a 4-foot by 4-foot square enclosed by the U.S. Customs posts and belts, now in an office.
What exactly are you doing in the United States, Mr. Navorsky?
Seated before the burly officer, Navorsky unfolds a piece of paper and reads.
Yellow taxi cab, please. Take me to Ramada Inn, 161 Lexington.
The burly officer takes notes.
Staying at the Ramada Inn? Keep the change. Do you know anyone in New York?
Yes.
Who?
Yes.
Who?
Yes.
No, do you know anyone in New York?
Yes, yes.
Who?
Yes.
Navorsky takes out a brochure and holds it up to the officer.
161.
Okay, Mr. Navorsky, I'm going to need to see your return ticket, please.
He hands him the brochure.
No, your return ticket.
Navorsky glances over his shoulder.
Now, this is just a standard procedure.
He puts the tickets in a plastic bag.
I'm going to need the passport also.
As the officer reaches, Navorsky shakes his hand.
No, Mr. Navorsky. That. Passport.
Navorsky holds out his passport.
That.
As the officer takes it by one corner, Navorsky grips it firmly. The officer tugs it free, now in another office.
Mr. Navorsky? Sorry to keep you waiting. How are you? I'm Frank Dixon. I'm the director of Customs and Border Protection here at JFK. which means that I help people with their immigration problems. Now, we're looking for an interpreter for you. How are we doing? Do we have an interpreter?
The burly officer shakes his head.
Okay. But I understand that you speak a little English.
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. I hope you don't mind if I eat while we talk.
Frank opens a lunchbox.
It seems that your country has suspended all traveling privileges on passports that have been issued by your government, and our State Department has revoked the visa that was going to allow you to enter the United States. That's it in a nutshell, basically, right? Anyway, it seems that while you were in the air, there was a military coup in your country. Now, most of the dead were members of the Presidential Guard. They were attacked in the middle of the night. It was a terrible firefight. They got it all on GHN, I think. Anyway, there were very few civilian casualties, so I'm sure your family's fine.
Mr. Navorsky, your country was annexed from the inside. The Republic of Krakosia is under new leadership.
Krakosia! Krakosia!
Navorsky smiles and gives a thumbs up.
Krakosia.
Right. Mm. I don't think he gets it. Okay. Let me.
Frank lays out his food.
Imagine that these potato chips are Krakosia. Okay.
Krakosia.
Krakosia.
Yes.
Krakosia.
Okay.
Okay. So the potato chips are Krakosia.
Okay.
Okay. And this apple.
Big apple.
Navorsky displays his voter's guidebook.
Represents the Liberty Rebels.
He strikes the chip bag with the apple, showering Navorsky in potato chips.
No more Krakosia. Okay? New government. Revolution. You understand? So all the flights in and out of your country have been suspended indefinitely. And the new government has sealed all the borders, which means that your passport and visa are no longer valid. So currently, you are a citizen of nowhere.
Now, even if we could get you new papers, we couldn't process them until the United States recognizes your country's new diplomatic reclassification.
Navorsky brushes chips off his jacket.
Asylum, refugee status, temporary protective status, humanitarian parole, or non-immigration work, travel, or diplomatic visas. You don't qualify for any of these things. You are, at this time, simply unacceptable.
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 He reads his book.
Big Apple tour include Brooklyn Bridge, Empire State, Broadway show, Cats.
Well, I got more bad news for you, Mr. Navorsky. Cats has closed.
Okay. Now I go New York City. Thank you.
He shakes Frank's hand.
I cannot allow you to enter the United States at this time.
Krakosia.
We can't allow you to go home either.
Right. Krakosia. And the thing is, you don't really have a home.
Yes.
You don't. Technically, it doesn't exist. I mean, it's like a Twilight Zone. Do you ever see that show?
Yes.
Huh? Did you get that show over there?
Yes, yes.
Talking Tina, Nightmare at 30,000 Feet, Xanti Misfits.
Well, Xanti Misfits, that's out of limits, sir.
Navorsky unfolds a paper and reads.
It's not important. Anyway.
Where do I buy the Nike shoes?
Okay, Ms. Navorsky, come on. Walk with me.
They leave the office.
Here's my dilemma, Ms. Navorsky. You have no legal right to enter the United States, and I have no legal right to detain you. It seems that you have fallen through a small crack in the system.
I am correct.
Yes. So, until we get this sorted out, I have no choice but to allow you to enter the International Transit Lounge. All right? So I'm going to sign a release form that is going to make you a free man.
Free?
Free. Free.
Free.
Free to go anywhere you like within the confines of the International Transit Lounge. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sure that Uncle Sam will have this all sorted out by tomorrow and welcome to the United States. Almost.
They shake hands.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks, Judge.
The burly guard escorts Navorsky through a doorway. A seal on the glass reads U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Navorsky and Judge head down a corridor to a pair of closed doors. As the guard slides a card through a reader, the doors swing open. He leads Navorsky into the transit lounge.
Okay. Now, Mr. Navorsky, Mr. Navorsky, Mr. Navorsky, this is the International Transit Lounge. You're free to wait here. These are food vouchers. You can use them up in the food court. Your Krakosian money is no good here. This is a 15-minute prepaid calling card. You may call home if you like. This, in case we need to contact you, is a pager. You must keep this with you at all times. Here is an ID badge for you to get into CBP. Beyond those doors, Mr. Navorsky, I'm going to need you to look at them. Beyond those doors is American soil. Mr. Dixon wants to make it very clear to you that you are not to enter
through those doors. You are not to leave this building. America is closed.
America closed. America closed. What I do?
There's only one thing you can do here, Mr. Navorsky. Shout.
Judge leaves. Navorsky approaches a TV in a magazine shop.
The international community is trying to make inroads to a peaceful resolution. Meanwhile, a troubled populace has to wonder if they will ever find political stability or find the leadership that will secure their place on the world stage. And next this hour, looks to buy a 90-foot yacht, how about a $200,000 golf cart?
Navorsky rushes out to a bank of monitors in a waiting area.
Have been taken hostage. We're also hearing now that the vice president has been killed, along with four cabinet members, 13 injured soldiers, and civilians. By dawn, rebel leaders had surrounded the state houses. In a symbolic gesture, the national flag of Kokoja was torn down as the president's palace and the parliament building.
Navorsky climbs up on a chair and feels around the edges of two TVs. As the news story changes to a financial report, he jumps down and races to a staircase with his luggage. As he ascends toward the second level, he chucks his suitcase onto a neighboring escalator running upwards. A TV hanging off the side of a column shows war footage.
Please, please! Please! Televisor! Как-то.
As he covers his mouth, his eyes well with tears. Behind him, his suitcase reaches the top of the escalator. Now he races up another escalator. He enters a private lounge.
Just in from our overseas bureau, last night a military coup overthrew the government of Kokoja. Bombing and gunfire were heard through the night. And although details of the coup are unclear, we are told that President Baklabov and his top aides have been taken hostage. We are hearing now.
Bonjour, monsieur. You are a red carpet club member.
Respirate.
I need to see your boarding pass at the
state
houses. I'm sorry. The public lounge is downstairs.
He ushers Navorsky out, two automatic doors shut. The doors reopen, revealing the newscast again. As the stranded traveler cries, the frosted glass doors slide shut in front of him. Later, on the second level, our view follows Navorsky from behind a Borders bookstore. His running form passes briefly behind a Starbucks lounge as he races to the down escalator. On the first floor, he approaches a kiosk of payphones. He picks up a receiver and looks at his New York calling card. As he turns, he bumps a male passenger.
Please, watch it!
Please.
He faces a man on the next phone. As the man turns away, Navorsky looks around. He drops the receiver and approaches other strangers.
Please.
Travelers ignore him as they walk by. Lowering his arms to his sides, Navorsky stares off despondently. Our view rises above the bustling transit lounge. Navorsky's minuscule figure grows imperceptible amid the dozens of people bustling in all directions. Later, a TV above a planter and some benches shows athletes using an exercise machine. Words in the background read, "Rock hard" and "Real results." The bottom of the screen displays an 800 number.
For security reasons, please keep your luggage with you at all times.
Sitting under the TV, Navorsky flips through his meal vouchers. The stranded traveler watches a teenager trying to close her overstuffed suitcase. As he lays aside his meal vouchers, they blow to the floor. Navorsky pushes down on the girl's suitcase.
Oh my God! You broke my bag! I got this in Paris. This is my favorite bag.
A janitor throws away the vouchers.
He broke my bag. Mom, Dad! He broke my bag.
Navorsky hurries after the janitor and finds one of his vouchers on the polished terminal floor. He rifles through the janitor's cart.
Food document.
Excuse me. Please. Stop it. Stop it. Do you have an appointment? I'm sorry, I don't let anyone to look at my trash without an appointment. I have an opening next Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Tuesday. It will be a good time for you to come back and get lost. Okay, goodbye. Sorry.
He wheels his cart away. Tuesday. Later, a dim aqua glow illuminates the second level. Dvorsky carries his luggage past travelers sprawled out on a carpet. On a closed hot dog stand, a neon sign displays the word Nathan's. Outside an inoperative automatic door, a sign reads, "Please excuse our dust." Dvorsky crosses into a partially renovated terminal. Along a dark wall, shrink wrap binds together stacks of boxes and curved air ducts. The vaulted ceiling curves on one side toward an empty boarding gate. On the other side, roving lights shine through skylights. Dvorsky drops his suitcase on the tile floor, then steps past a few dying plants into the carpeted gate. On the ceiling, several glass panels hang open from fluorescent lights. Dvorsky moves between rows of modular chair units. Each bench-like unit is 4 seats wide. Taking a seat, he eyes his planter's nut can, then stuffs it in his carry-on bag. He zips it closed, then leans back and stretches his arms. Dvorsky puts his foot up on an armrest across the aisle. The row of chairs wobbles. He sits up and pulls the entire seat unit closer to himself. As he stretches out again, his feet fit through 2 gaps where a couple of backrests are missing. He folds his arms and closes his eyes. As he rolls over on his side, he starts to slip through the crack between the 2 benches. Grabbing the armrests, he tries to pull himself back up. His butt slumps to the floor. Later, he reaches into a plastic bag inside his suitcase and pulls out a small wrapped gift. He removes a box and takes out a utility knife. Readying its screwdriver, he turns toward an upside-down seat unit and goes to work on it. Now a bunch of hardware lies in a pile as Dvorsky drags along 2 benches stripped of their armrests. Jostling them, he sets them flush to one another, like a bed. Later, a fuse box cover drops to the floor. Dvorsky yanks out one of the fuses. As he removes another fuse, most of the lights turn off. Now, Dvorsky takes a seat on one of his modified benches and sets his carry-on bag beside him. He takes out his planter's nut can and kisses it. He makes the sign of the cross. Lying back, he turns the can in his fingers, then holds it to his chest. A brilliant light shines on him. He sits up, holding his arms overhead.
Don't shoot!
A jet taxis by outside. Daytime. In the security department, a rotund, silver-haired man holds a brochure.
She sleeps 12, Frank.
Yeah.
Has a 120-volt generator, a wet bar, gas range.
No, she looks amazing. It's
She's my dream, Frank. My pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Well, she's a beautiful boat, and I hope you get her soon. You've earned her.
Ah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frank.
You have?
Actually, I bought her yesterday.
Oh, come on. Congratulations.
Frank, I'm nominating you to take my place. Starting today, you will assume the duties of acting field commissioner until you get approval from Washington.
Really?
Huh?
I don't know what to say. Jesus. Richard, is this real?
It's real, Frank. It's real. Don't you stand there pretending to be surprised.
They enter Frank's office.
Well,
you've been waiting for me to retire or drop dead for years now.
No, I haven't been waiting for you to retire.
Richard grins and leans on Frank's desk.
It's all right, Frank. My retirement will become official the day you get sworn in.
Frank nods.
Waited a long time for this, Frank.
I have.
Just be careful about the inspection process. Yeah.
I will. I've been here for 17 years, so I'm...
Frank, we're talking about the field commissioner position. People are going to look to you for leadership. To set an example.
Mounted fish decorate the walls.
Well, what are you saying?
Richard grins, nods, and shakes Frank's hand.
saying the job is yours to lose.
Later, Frank enters the surveillance room.
Ship the Colombians off to asylum hearings. Run priors and backgrounds on the Chinese before deporting. And call the parents of those kids from Long Island. Tell them it was a bad idea to let them go to Jamaica.
Yes, sir.
Come on, everybody, let's go. We got South America and Madrid on the tarmac. I want them out of here in a half an hour. Come on.
Guards watching a monitor head off. On screen, Navorsky wears a bathrobe.
Mr. Thurman.
Frank and Judge eye the screen.
There's a man walking around the terminal in a bathrobe.
I know, sir. You put him there.
Navorsky passes the food court. Later, in a public restroom, he stands at a sink wrapped only in a towel. Hunched over the running water, he shampoos his hair and strains to rinse soap off his underarms. A traveler enters, sees Navorsky, and hurries out. Now a customs officer stamps a green form, approved, and hands it back to a smiling couple.
Next!
Navorsky hands his identification to the female officer.
I need this.
Where's your green form? I can't do anything without your green entry form. Go to the wall.
She points.
Next!
Later, he hands her his ID with the wide form.
Sir.
She holds up the wide form next to a narrower one.
The light green form.
Now on a TV, Tony Randall holds up a red pepper.
I love New York.
The image switches to the Rockettes. At a nearby counter, Navorsky fills out the light green form under a sign that reads U.S. Customs and Border Protection. He picks up his bag, glances at the TV, and heads through a waiting area. He follows an aisle toward another counter where the female CBP officer types on a computer. Navorsky offers her the paperwork.
Light green.
The officer glances at the form and sets it aside.
Mr. Navorsky,
Yes. You
cannot get into New York without a visa. You cannot get a visa without a passport, and you cannot get a new passport without a country. There's nothing we can do for you here.
She returns his ID.
I give you light green.
I'm sorry, but you've wasted an entire day. At this time, you are simply...
Unaccepted.
Yes.
Unaccepted.
She stamps the form denied. Later.
Why is he still here?
You released him, sir. You put him there.
Well, why the hell doesn't he walk out the doors? Why doesn't he try to escape?
Sir, you told him to wait.
But I didn't think he'd actually do it.
In the CBP waiting area, a snoozing man leans on Navorsky.
I mean, he's in a crack. Who the hell waits in a crack?
Well, there's no news from the State Department, but I think we can report him in a few days.
Yeah, it could be a few days. It could be a week, 2 weeks, a month. Who knows what this guy is thinking? What gulag he escaped from.
Navorsky leans forward. The sleeping man's head dips behind him.
Everything he does comes back to me.
You want to bring him back to the holding cell?
No. I'll show him the door.
Now Navorsky approaches the janitor.
Hello. Hello.
Do you have an appointment?
Yes. 9:30. Food document trash. Tuesday,
I hate the Tuesday.
The janitor wheels away his cart.
Excuse me.
Now Navorsky approaches a display case of truffles. He eyes the sweets and fights back tears. Later in the food court, Navorsky sits before condiment packets and saltine crackers. On top of his planter's nut can, one cracker lies slathered with ketchup. As he sandwiches the glob with another, the ketchup pushes through the cracker's holes. Navorsky adds a saltine with mayonnaise and one with mustard. As he lifts the sandwich, he notices Frank facing him.
Airports are tricky places, Mr. Navorsky.
They ride the escalator down.
I'm about to tell you something. Something that you can never repeat to anyone. Do you understand? It's a secret.
Secret?
Yes, a secret. At 12 o'clock today...
Frank points to an exit.
The guards at those doors are going to leave their posts. And the replacements are going to be 5 minutes late.
Late 5 minutes?
Yes, late 5 minutes. At 12 o'clock. Just today, just this once. No one is going to be watching those doors. And no one is going to be watching you.
So America not closed?
No. America, for 5 minutes, is open. Have a nice life, Mr. Navorsky.
Frank shakes the traveler's hand and walks away. Navorsky checks his watch, then gazes toward the exit doors. Upstairs, Frank and Judge enter the surveillance room.
Catch and release, Judge. It's very simple. Sometimes you land a small fish, you unhook him very carefully, and you place him back in the water. You set him free so that somebody else can have the pleasure of catching him. All right.
Frank operates a joystick and changes the security camera's angle.
All right, here we go. Okay, call him up.
Jensen, clear the doors.
Judge communicates with the guards on his hand radio.
All right, go. Get out.
The two guards leave.
All right, there's the door. All right. Here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah, and now where is he?
Oh, there he is.
No, that's not him. That's not him.
Are you sure?
Yeah, there he is.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, Victor. Here we go.
Frank and Judge watch the monitor. Out on the transit lounge floor, Navorsky approaches the unguarded exit, stops, and stares through the glass doors. Travelers outside bustle past waiting taxis. As Navorsky gazes thoughtfully outside, Frank and Judge watch the monitors with confused stares.
What's so complicated? Exit, Victor. Come on. A couple minutes, you're going to be somebody else's problem.
I must make sure that nobody's watching.
No, I know. I told him nobody would be watching. He can... Come on. All right. Here we go.
Navorsky moves hesitantly.
Call the airport police.
Port Authority is on his way.
Navorsky reaches for the door.
Excuse me.
A woman barges past him, wheeling along her suitcase. Navorsky backs up a few paces, then frowns, shooting a sidelong glance toward a wall-mounted camera. Trained on him, it swivels as he moves. Navorsky remains motionless, then steps slowly toward the doors. He stops.
You got it. There we go.
Navorsky backs up.
Gotta get a running start, I guess. All right, come on, Victor. Just leave.
Navorsky sets down his suitcase and ties his shoe.
Leave. What's he doing? Why is he kneeling? Is he praying?
No, he's trying to shoot.
Do they pray at noon?
The camera tilts forward as Navorsky goes down on one knee, then levels as he stands.
Come on, leave.
Navorsky eyes the camera.
Get the cameras.
With the joystick, Frank steers the camera off of Navorsky. On the lounge floor, Navorsky stands under the camera, staring up at it.
Where is he?
As the roving lens angles straight down, Navorsky ducks around a corner.
Left, to the left.
No, he was just at the door.
Right, if we just go a little left.
All right.
The camera view cranes downward. Navorsky's face fills the surveillance screen. Out on the floor, he stands on his suitcase, staring into it.
I wait.
In the surveillance room, behind Frank, the mustached officer who first processed Navorsky grins amid others. Frank notices them.
What are you looking at? What are you doing? Go back to work.
Thank you.
Out on the floor, a flight attendant passes wet floor signs, slips, and snaps a heel off of her shoe. As it skids away, Navorsky catches it underfoot. He picks up the high heel.
Opa.
As the dark-haired attendant collects her things, Navorsky walks to her side.
This belong you?
Oh, thank you.
Please.
Oh, shit.
Navorsky points to a signs graphic of a fallen person.
See the wet floor? That you. Right
there. I'm so late. Buenos Aires, I just can't remember the gate.
Gate 24.
You sure?
Yes.
The woman intentionally breaks off her other shoe's heel. Walking on her toes, she heads to an escalator.
Wait. For you.
He hands her a flyer.
Pairless shoes. Second floor. Sensible heels.
She accepts the flyer and smiles at him. At the top of the escalator, a suave gray-haired man grins at her. The flight attendant returns the warm expression. Below, Navorsky watches, tucking flyers into his blazer pocket. As they kiss, Navorsky's gaze drops. The janitor eyes him, now in a luggage routing area.
I think it's CIA. The CIA put him here to spy on us.
You don't know what the hell you're talking about. That guy doesn't even speak English.
If he could not speak, this guy, he can't speak English. How could he have a meeting with a beautiful woman? A flight attendant.
Oh, so she's CIA too?
No, she looked like a Russian. KGB. She gave him heel of her shoes, and he gave her a piece of the paper.
What was it, microfilm?
A coupon from Paris Shoes. Must be some kind of a call.
A stout baggage handler faces him.
I think you've been spending too much time inhaling them cleaning products.
I'm warning you guys. You watch yourself. This guy is here for a reason. And I think that reason is us.
Now outside Dean and DeLuca, Navorsky watches a worker clean plates off of a table. Navorsky twiddles his fingers and eyes an uncleared table with food still on the plates. He focuses on the leftovers and inches forward. A plump woman pushing a baggage cart suddenly blocks his path.
Excuse me, buddy.
As he steps aside, the woman adds the cart to a row of others nestled and locked on a return stand. She reaches into a coin tray and leaves. Navorsky approaches the stand. The front panel reads, "Return here, 25-cent reward." He checks the empty coin tray. Now in the surveillance room, Frank joins Judge and several others watching the monitors.
What's going on?
It's Navorsky. He's figured out the quarters.
On the monitor screen, Navorsky pushes three carts across the transit lounge. Out on the floor, he steers them carefully around the front of the return stand. The traveler studies the front panel as he feeds the nested carts onto a special track. Navorsky scurries to the coin tray and scoops three quarters into his hand. Now at the food court, he approaches a Burger King counter.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Burger King. May I take your order?
As he sets down the quarters, the worker gives him a penny and a sandwich.
Keep the chitch.
At a table, Navorsky unwraps the burger and hungrily chomps into it. With his mouth full, he takes bite after bite. The traveler removes a crumb from his lip, studies it, and puts it in his mouth. Now with his carry-on loaded onto a cart's upper basket, he finds a second abandoned cart and steers both around the bustling lounge. Navorsky approaches two young boys riding a cart. As the boys power it with their feet, Navorsky grabs the handle.
Okay, go, go.
The boys stay seated. Tilting the cart, he dumps them out. Navorsky pats their heads.
Thank you, thank you.
He collects the third cart and waves to the boys. Now at the stand, a row of 12 carts slides into the locking rack. Navorsky rushes to the coin tray. It's empty. He bangs on the machine and quarters shoot out. He flinches as they hit his forehead and cheeks. Now he heads back to Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King. May I take your order?
Navorsky drops a handful of coins. At a table, he lifts a double Whopper off of a tray packed with food and bites into the deluxe sandwich. As Navorsky smacks his lips, sauce remains on his face. The stranded traveler looks around, then gets up from the table with his Whopper in hand. He passes other tables in the food court and heads to a television monitor, hanging at eye level. As headlines scroll under a news report, the traveler points to the words.
Now that heavy fighting has subsided and both sides have dug in deep for the long winter ahead, it's clear that the future of Krakosia may be in doubt for some time to come. Meanwhile, the people of Krakosia suffer the consequences.
I'm food, food, food.
Navorsky taps on the passing words.
In Krakosia.
He grimaces. Now in a Borders bookstore, Navorsky selects two copies of a New York tour book. Later in the unfinished terminal, light shines on a tour book page in English, then passes over the same page in Bulgarian. Wearing a construction helmet with a headlamp, Navorsky reads on his makeshift bed. He looks at a picture of the cast of Friends.
Cost of.
His eyes shift to the page in his language.
Friends, which is set in New York. Really? Friends. Really? Friends.
In the dim boarding gate, Navorsky studies in his pajamas. Daytime. Thick snow falls outside the transit lounge. A crowd of stranded travelers fills the waiting area. Nearby, Navorsky stands at a television reading the scrolling text.
When Newton is 61 today, it's a miracle, remarkable. Corinne conjoined twins separated today. In the end, chances of survival, 50-50. 50-50.
Now, seeing Navorsky, the female CBP officer holds her red stamp.
Next.
A worker in red coveralls watches them.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Navorsky. Why do you wait here 2 hours every day when I've told you there's nothing I can do for you, that your new visa will not arrive until your country is recognized by the United States?
You have two stamps. One red, one green.
So?
So, I have chance go New York. 50-50.
The officer gives him a warm grin.
Yes. It's a beautiful way to look at it, but America doesn't work that way.
The worker in coveralls looks on. Navorsky notices Frank and Judge eyeing him through a glass partition. Now the stranded Krakosian pushes more than a dozen carts across the lounge. Frank and his men watch from Borders books.
As acting field commissioner, I've created a new position here at JFK. Transportation liaison for passenger assistance.
Sir, what would that person do?
Now a burly man halts Navorsky's line of carts.
Thank you. I'll take it from here.
The burly man hands Navorsky his carry-on bag.
I'm transportation liaison in charge of passenger assistance.
As the burly man takes the carts, Navorsky counts his quarters. The man in red coveralls watches. Now Frank and Judge leave Borders books.
No carts, no quarters. No quarters, no food. I'll give him a few days before he barrels through those doors in clear violation of Section 214. Then he's somebody else's problem.
Sir, why don't we tag him in violation of Section 214 now and then ship him off to detention?
No, he has to break the law by leaving this terminal. I won't lie, particularly to get rid of somebody like Victor Navorsky.
Now in the food court, Navorsky squeezes mustard onto a cracker and presses another on top. As a nearby group feasts on Chinese food, Navorsky stacks more crackers on his tiny sandwich. As he raises it to his lips, he spots the dark-haired airline attendant waving and smiling while hurrying along. Navorsky smiles shyly at her, and she waves again and quickens her pace toward the food court entrance. As Navorsky stands and waves, the gray-haired man bumps him, running past. Navorsky's cracker sandwich splats onto the floor.
Sorry, buddy.
Honey!
The gray-haired man and the airline attendant rush into each other's arms. As he lifts her off of her feet and kisses her, Navorsky watches, empty-handed. The happy couple walks off with their arms around each other, and Navorsky eyes the mess on the floor. He grabs a mop from a nearby custodial cart and begins cleaning it up.
Put it down. Put it down.
The old janitor runs up.
Put it down.
He snatches the mop from Navorsky's hand.
You tried to take my mop. You tried to take my floor. It's my job. Stay off my floor. Stay away from my mop. If you touch it again, I kill you.
As he leaves, Navorsky slips on the wet floor. Now, as Navorsky returns to the unfinished terminal, a light shines on his face. The employee in red coverall sits on an electric transport cart.
Hey, I'm Enrique Cruz.
The front reads, Club Car. Enrique holds up a tray.
We need to talk.
Plastic wrap covers airplane food. Later, Enrique leads Navorsky through a kitchen.
I want to make a deal with you.
What deal? What?
I need information on CBP Officer Torres. You feed me information about her, and I'll feed you.
What do you want to know?
You see her every day.
Yes.
I want to know what makes her knees weak. What makes her blood boil, her body tingle. She's a wild stallion. You'll help me break her. I'm her man of mystery.
Officer Torres is wild stallion.
Her name is Dolores.
Yes.
So you help me to win her heart and you'll never go hungry again.
Navorsky snatches the food tray.
I do this.
Really?
Yes.
Promise?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
What mean wild stallion?
Daytime. Navorsky runs to the CBP counter, pushing past other travelers in line.
Dobrade, Officer Torres, my friend, say, you are stallion.
Navorsky.
Stallion.
What?
Stallion, like a horse.
Stand behind the O-line.
It's horse, beautiful
behind?
Horse.
What? Who said that?
You like food? My friend, drive the food.
Navorsky. Behind the yellow line, I will help you once you wait your turn.
I'll get the light green.
Light green form, please.
I'll be back.
Okay.
Nighttime. In the unfinished terminal, Navorsky eats an airplane meal.
This is one thing.
Enrique sits across from him.
Very important.
What? What did she tell you?
Navorsky points to his food tray.
You don't like it? Is something wrong with the salmon?
They need the gorchitsa. Gorchitsa? Mustard? Mustard, please.
Enrique runs to his club cart and reaches for a food container.
Thank you.
Navorsky sips from a plastic coffee cup. Daytime. Navorsky marches into the CBP office with a light green form. He approaches Torres's counter.
Officer Torres, you like the films, movies?
Not so much.
The rockets?
Can't afford it.
What do you like?
Conventions.
Conventions? What is?
Conventions.
Conventions. This is like secret place you go.
Nighttime.
So she go to this convention just as your man ran. Woman ran.
She's a trekkie.
Yes,
she's a trekkie.
This doomsday machine.
Ay, no puede ser, no puede ser. Este ya se hizo. Now, listen, Victor. You gotta ask her something that is very important.
Okay.
Look. Daytime, Navorsky prances into the CBP office with a light green form. Seeing Torres with another traveler, he stops behind the yellow line.
I went.
Enjoy your visit.
As the turban traveler leaves, Torres smiles at Navorsky.
Next.
Keeping his eyes on her, Navorsky sets his form on the counter.
Officer Torres.
Mr. Navorsky.
You have to choose. Man with money or man with love.
Her mouth hangs slightly agape as she avoids his gaze. Navorsky grins.
What is choose?
Torres stamps his form denied. Later in the unfinished terminal, he eats a salad.
So she had a boyfriend? For how long?
Navorsky raises two fingers.
What happened?
He finishes chewing.
Eat shit.
What?
Eat shit.
Eat shit?
Eat shit. Eat shit, eat shit, eat shit.
Okay, try to repeat exactly what she said.
Eat shit. She catch him.
So he cheats.
Yes. What we call cross catch. We say cross catch. Uh-huh. Yes. One man, uh-huh. Two women. Uh-huh. So, crowded, you know?
He makes a chopping motion.
Okay. He cheats.
Mm-hmm.
You say cheats, it not shit. No. Cheat.
Enrique. You? No shit.
No cheat.
No cheat.
Yeah, no. I want cheat, not shit.
She's a nice girl. She won't take your shit.
Later, Navorsky strides into the CBP office. As Torres sees him, she rests her chin on her palm.
Next.
Officer Torres, have you been ever in the love?
Enough, Victor. Who is it? Who's telling you to ask me these things?
Well, it's a man of misery.
She gives a frustrated scowl, then stamps his form.
Miss Misery. Mystery?
No. Misery, man of misery. Oh, he's so sick, he's so in love.
Later, in the unfinished terminal.
But what did she say?
Well, she did say, next. Now, she said, please, come.
That's... Wait.
What?
Victor looks at his beeper. He grabs his carry-on.
Oh, wait. Victor, just tell me more.
Running off, he holds the beeper to his mouth. Later.
Please.
Pushing past others, Victor runs down the escalator and slides across a wet cordoned-off section of the floor. The janitor watches. At a wall, Victor slides his ID badge through a reader. He opens a door and races through. Later, a guard brings a plate of food into a processing cubicle.
Beeping, uh-huh. So
yes, we beeped you.
I grab, yeah. I come.
Good, we have an idea.
Yes.
Okay, would you like something to eat? You look like you're starving.
Oh, no food.
No?
I stuffed.
Frank eyes Judge and the other guard.
Okay, all right. Thanks.
The guard takes away the food.
So, Mr. Navorsky, I have some very, very good news for you.
What?
I think that I figured out a way to get you out of this airport.
Oh.
Well... We have laws here that protect aliens who have a credible fear of returning to their own country. If we can establish this fear with you, then the CBP will be forced to begin expedited removal procedures, bring you to an immigration judge, and let you plead your case for asylum.
Asylum?
Mm-hmm. Asylum. Unfortunately, the courts are so backed up with asylum cases that the soonest you get before a judge would probably be 6 months from now.
Yes, and we would have no choice but to let you go for those 6 months. It's the law. You'd be released.
Right. You would be free to wait in New York until your court date, But believe it or not, most people, they never show up before the judge.
So I go New York City?
Uh-huh. You can go to New York City tonight. But you only get to go if we can establish a credible fear.
Fear?
Mm-hmm. Fear.
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 From what?
Well, that's the best part. It doesn't really matter what you're afraid of. It's all the same to Uncle Sam. Okay? So I'm going to ask you one question, Victor, and it's a simple question. And if you give me the correct answer, I can get you out of this airport tonight.
Victor glances at Judge, who sits beside him.
So I answer one question.
Mm-hmm.
Go to New York City tonight.
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 He folds his arms and shrugs.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right. Do you, at this time, have any fear of returning to your own country?
No.
He grins at Frank, who freezes. The acting field commissioner rubs his brow.
Okay. Let me try it again. Your country's at war, Victor.
Yes, yes, at war. Okay.
There are men in the streets with guns. Political persecution.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. And God only knows what could happen. Right? Yes. Innocent people are torn from their beds and thrown into jail.
Yeah, on Tuesday.
Right?
On Tuesday.
Yeah,
I hit Tuesday.
Yeah, it's hard. So you're afraid?
From what?
Krakosia. You're afraid of Krakosia.
Krakosia?
Mm-hmm.
No, no, I'm not afraid from Krakosia. I'm a little afraid of this room.
Okay. I'm talking about bombs. I'm talking about human dignity. I'm talking about human rights. Victor, please don't be afraid to tell me that you're afraid of Krakosia.
Victor leans in closer.
His home. I'm not afraid from my home.
Frank kneels at his side.
So? I go to New York City now?
The commissioner rises.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm afraid
okay.
from ghosts.
Okay. Thanks very much.
I'm afraid
thanks very
from
much.
Dracula.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Victor.
Afraid from
thanks
wolfmen.
A lot. We'll see you again. Okay.
Afraid from.
Thank you, Victor.
Sharks.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
In the food court, the janitor watches a traveler take a spill on the clearly marked wet floor. Victor approaches.
Why you do this?
Nobody read the sign in America.
Another man falls.
This is the only one I have.
A barbecue?
Victor turns.
That's why I'm not going to see you. Let me get this straight.
At a payphone.
Change my schedule to meet you. I take four back-to-back flights. Fly 27 hours straight. Literally, around the world. And now you tell me you're going to spend the 4th of July with your wife? The woman hates fireworks.
Victor pretends to use the next phone.
Don't lie to me, okay? I know for a fact you took it to Rome last weekend. Because you flew United, Max.
She hangs up and sobs. Victor watches her as he holds a receiver to his ear. She leans back against the phone kiosk and covers her mouth. Victor gives her a handkerchief. She glances over her shoulder.
You make it a habit out of listening to other people's conversations.
No, I try to call home. So, then...
You know why men are such assholes?
No.
A sticker on his phone reads out of service. She sticks it to his shirt.
Because they're all liars.
She storms off.
Wait.
The janitor grins as he watches Victor chase her.
Wait, floor, wait, please. Don't be hurt.
How can I not be? He's married.
One man, two women. Crowded.
You want to know what the worst part is? I never even asked him to leave his wife. I was encouraging him to get counseling. I mean, what kind of sick person am I? I'm rooting for the home team.
The flight attendant looks over a railing at the transit lounge, then faces Victor.
I just wish the sex wasn't so amazing.
Oh, yeah, well, okay.
It's
all right, bye-bye.
He starts to leave.
You know, sometimes in the mornings, I just stare at him over room service. Watch him do the crossword puzzle.
She sits at a table.
I start to think that maybe this could happen. That we belong together.
Victor sits across from her.
This man is you. Why he need hustle?
This is my problem. I always see men the way I want to see him. I know you from someplace.
Sensible heels, Pella shoes, second floor.
Let's go. Oh. We headed for home?
No, I am delayed long time.
I hate it when they delay flights. What do?
Oh, I go from one building to another building. I have paper.
Oh, contractors. You guys travel as much as we do. Ah.
She returns his handkerchief.
Sorry about that. Thank you very much. What's BH?
In English, Victor Naborsky.
In English, Amelia Warren.
Amelia Warren?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
You too. Nice to see you again.
Standing, Victor slings his carry-on bag over his shoulder.
You like Italian food? I know it's late and you probably got other plans, but if you'd like to grab some dinner right now, we can run right out and catch a cab. I know a place that has the greatest cannelloni.
No, I can't.
You married?
No.
Girlfriend?
No. I can't go out with you.
Amelia pounds her fists on her lap.
God! I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
She heads off.
Must come off like a complete nut job or something.
No.
I didn't want to eat alone. You ever done that before?
What floor? No,
please, you don't have to explain.
He watches her leave, then approaches a food court employee as she wipes down a table.
Nadia, in New York restaurant, what cost is cantaloni?
I don't know, maybe $15?
Dollars?
20. Two people, 40.
Victor walks toward a railing and watches Amelia descend to the lower level on the escalator. Turning away from her, he creases his brow.
Two people, $40.
Our view weaves toward the Yoshinoya restaurant. A sign on the counter reads, "Help Wanted."
I help you?
He holds up the sign.
So sorry, sir. The position has already been filled.
Now on the first level, Victor marches into a brickstone. Later, the store manager holds his application form.
Do you live nearby?
Yes. Gate 67.
Because we are very particular about punctuality. Did you say gate 67?
Gate 67.
Now at La Perla, a worker holds another application.
You gotta be kidding.
At Swatch.
You gotta help me help you. I don't see a social security number, driver's license number.
At the Discovery store.
Even a phone number?
Telephone?
Yeah.
You need? I get. Right. I get phone.
Victor runs into a window.
I get phone.
Eyes blinking, he hobbles out of the store to the nearest payphone kiosk. Moments later, he hurries back to the store and feels his way around the window to the entrance.
4-5-1-1-2-2-6.
All right, and when's the best time to reach you?
No.
Later, outside the store, a TV shows a dog leaping straight up. Victor sits underneath, tapping his thigh as he stares at the phone kiosk. A worker exits a Paul Mitchell salon. As she closes the door, the lights go off. Another worker pulls down a gate in front of Cambridge Soundworks. A man in a ball cap locks a barrier at a gift shop. Victor's foot twitches anxiously. Holding a fist to his abdomen, he eyes a sign indicating men's and women's restrooms. He answers.
Hello?
Hi, Mr. Naborsky.
Yes, this is Victor Naborsky. Who calls?
It's Cliff, the manager of the Discovery Store.
He faces Victor through the window.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good.
Is this a good time?
Oh, yes, Cliff. I wait for your call the whole day.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I got to tell you that the position's been filled.
Oh.
Yeah, so Could you please go sit someplace else?
Yeah, I go to the bathroom now.
That'd be good.
Thank you.
Victor hangs up.
Thank you.
You okay?
He dashes into the restroom corridor and disappears around the left corner. He runs to the other side. Later, Victor returns to the dark, unfinished terminal. Buckets and paint cans rest along a wall. Around the corner, a pair of floodlights on stands reveal splotchy, chipped-away paint on another wall. Victor knocks at different points with his knuckles. He feels around the rough surface, then touches a light switch fixture. It falls off. Victor peers into a bucket and pulls out a metal-bladed scraper. He strips a chunk of paint off the wall, puts down his carry-on bag, then continues scraping. Now work lights shine on the space. Victor smooths spackle onto the wall. He cuts wood with a circular saw. Next, he carefully sands the flat side of a long section of crown molding. He then positions it near the ceiling. Now sunshine floods the finished painted wall. Molding divides the wall into stately panels under an ornamental cornice. Paintbrush in hand, he dances backward in loose-legged steps toward a crew in hard hats. Turning, he sees them. A man holding blueprints steps forward.
Who is this?
He frowns at Victor.
Who are you?
There's no one. There's no one here for another 2 weeks. This isn't one of my guys.
Victor quickly replaces a paintbrush on the work table and puts on his shirt.
Look at this cornice. This is good work.
Must be Harry's crew.
The crewman faces Victor.
You with Harry's crew?
Does Harry think he's running this job?
I go, no.
Go? Go where?
Gate 67.
67? We're 10 months away from 67.
He's got to be Harry's. If he's not mine and he's not yours.
Well, Harry's trying to make me look bad. I got to slow that prick down before he gets to 67. What's your name?
Victor Nemborsky.
The foreman glances at the crewman.
Bobby, pull him off Harry's crew, put him on mine. You start 6:30 Monday morning.
Bobby nods.
You give me chop? 6:30, yes. Yes, boss.
Now a full construction crew works on the walls. Using a paint roller, Victor wears earphones and nods rhythmically as he applies a smooth coat of paint. Nighttime. Victor strides away from the dark construction area wearing his hard hat and a name tag. He approaches a cold drink vending machine. Victor kicks the base of its door and opens it. A half-empty quart of milk is propped near the drink can slots next to an apple and some yogurt. He removes the milk and yogurt, then sees a note taped to the door headed Midnight Tonight with a hand-drawn map. Later, in baggage routing, he circles a conveyor.
We have lobster ravioli from Alitalia.
Good.
We have caviar from Russian Aeroflot.
Enrique carries food trays.
Hey, Victor!
Hello!
Joe, the baggage handler, and the janitor sit at a table.
Without a country. Come on in. Welcome.
I see this.
Yeah, you did well. Have a seat.
Here.
He joins their table.
Who invited him?
I did. We needed a fourth, right?
I'm not going to play with him.
Oh, Gupta, relax, would you? He ain't a spy.
How do you know? He could be recording everything we say. A wire in his shirt, a microphone up in his hat. I'm not going to lose my job.
Fine.
Joe puffs a cigarette.
Will you feel better if we x-rayed him?
Yes.
Victor lies on the x-ray conveyor.
Close your eyes.
Holding the planter's can, he passes through the machine. A negative image of his body appears on the detector's monitor. The planter's can appears as a round dark mass atop his chest.
Okay, so you are clean.
Good. Let's play cards.
I will have money, but Friday.
Don't worry about it, Victor. We don't play for cash. We play for unclaimed items from the lost and found.
You'll be amazed at what people leave at airports.
Later.
Come.
I have 2 9s and 2 9s.
Oh.
4 9s.
Victor takes a 5-foot stuffed sailfish off the table.
Careful, careful.
Oh.
Wait. Hey, we have a question for you, Victor.
Yeah, we're just curious.
What is in the can?
Oh, this?
Yeah, we saw the x-ray.
We know. There's no nuts in there.
What is in there? This is Joss.
Jess?
Joss, yes.
Jazz?
Yes.
Victor taps the top of the can.
You sure it's jazz in there, Victor? Ooh, yes. Check again. It might be the blues.
Yeah, maybe some salsa.
Yeah, maybe Stevie Wonder.
No, it's okay, jazz. Guys, okay. For tonight's grand prize, we have...
Enrique shuffles.
Show them, Gupta.
Oh, I found this upstairs. Virgin Air. First class lounge.
Gupta holds up frilly lace panties.
And they belong to?
Cher.
Cher? As in Cher?
Yeah, Cher. I checked it out. There were witnesses. Those are Cher's panties. Ready?
Hurry up.
So will we share the panties?
No.
Not if I win. Come on.
Wait a second.
Enrique deals. Daytime. In the International Transit Lounge, Victor stands reading at a bookshelf display inside Borders. At another rack across the floor, a woman looks up from perusing a book. It's Amelia.
Victor? Oh. Hi! Oh.
She drops reading glasses. He picks them up.
Man, I gotta say, I am so sorry about what happened last time, you know, asking you out like that. I'm so used to guys trying to grab my ass at 30,000 feet that when I finally meet somebody who keeps his hands in his pockets, I don't know how to react. So let's just start over, huh?
Yes, okay.
Are you coming or going?
I don't know. Both.
Tell me about it.
Good. Napoleon?
Yeah. I read a lot of history books. They're long and cheap and usually about men killing each other.
They go downstairs to a cashier.
Pages for $9.99. You can't beat that.
No, but Napoleon.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Do you know what saved Napoleon's life?
No.
His ego.
Ego?
Yep. After he loses the Battle of Waterloo, Napoleon isolates himself on the tiny island of St. Helena. Now, no one knows exactly what happens next, but the version I like goes like this.
Victor cleans her glasses.
He's very depressed, and he decides to take his own life. But Napoleon believes himself to be of such superhuman strength that he takes 6 times the amount of poison needed to do the job. I mean, his stomach is so full up with poison that his body rejects it, and he doesn't die. See? Ego. Mm-hmm. Saved his life.
Maybe he needs glasses.
Glasses?
To read words on bottle. Poison.
Amelia pays the cashier and takes her glasses.
You know, it's funny you should say that. Rumor has it that Napoleon was farsighted. There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
They exit the store.
Victor, I think we're rewriting history right here. Why don't we talk about it over lunch?
They both stop in their tracks.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I just asked you out again. I just did it again.
Amelia heads off, then turns back to Victor.
Just stay away from me, Victor, okay? I'm sick. I don't have the ability to be alone for 5 seconds.
Okay.
Her face sobers.
Okay, what?
Okay. Lunch. With you.
You'll have lunch with me?
Yes.
You're not running for a flight, or?
I wait.
They both reach for their pagers. Amelia drops her book.
It's me.
You, yes.
Victor picks it up.
I'm sorry. I just got paged.
You work?
No.
Ah, trio. Crowded.
Stay away from me, Victor. I have a serious problem. I'm as bad as Napoleon. I just keep ingesting these poisonous men until I make myself sick.
You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
Victor leans on a railing and Amelia meets his gentle gaze.
I have to go.
I have to stay.
Story of my life.
Oh, it's all.
Amelia smiles and walks away. He watches her leave with a furrowed brow. As she glances back over her shoulder, he gives a slight wave. Now in Frank's office, Judge holds a clipboard and faces his boss. Frank changes views of Victor and the contractors with the joystick.
Your CBP inspection's in 3 days. The FBI and Homeland Security will tour the airport at 9 a.m., spend 2 hours observing these officers before your interview process begins.
How much does Navorsky make?
Sir?
How much does he make? How much are they paying him?
I believe they're paying him cash under the table, sir.
I know that. How much?
$19 an hour.
Unbelievable. Do you know that's more than I make?
That's New York City construction.
Do you know, one of my own men came up to me the other day. Asked me if I wanted to join the big pool.
He zooms in on the construction workers.
Place a bet on when Navorsky was going to leave this airport. Have you heard about this?
Judge nods.
I have January 3rd.
Frank turns his gaze from the monitors to Judge.
Bring him in.
Later on the phone.
Jake, he has no nationality, okay? No country. So automatically he's a national security risk, according to my interpretation of Section 212. So all I'm asking for is that you put him in a federal detention center and run a clearance on him. That's all I want. Well, what about a federal prison? Well, what about another airport? Hello? Hello?
He slams down the phone.
Country's detaining so many people, there's no goddamn room anywhere.
You tried the FBI?
Yes, I tried the FBI. I tried everybody. Nobody will take them.
Well, you want me to bring him back to the terminal?
No. From now on, Navorsky lives here.
Frank leans on a monitor. On it, Victor walks across a detention area toward the security camera. Frank angrily shuts it off. Now Frank addresses his officers.
The people who are coming here today will be observing me. Inspecting me. But most of all, they will be looking at the way that this airport is run. So, let's show them why this is the number one airport in the United States.
Later.
Well, we process about 600 planes a day, the processing time of 37 minutes per plane, about 60 seconds per passenger.
At a checkpoint, a bag of walnuts sits in an open suitcase.
Stuff, so we keep it as clean as possible.
Import, export.
Oh, yeah, what do you import?
Oh, computer software.
It's a lot of walnuts.
My mother-in-law loves these things. Every time I go on business to Brazil, she makes me bring her back a bag.
Your mother-in-law?
Yeah.
Mind if I try one?
Frank opens the bag. Later, a customs officer cracks a walnut open and takes out a small baggie of white powder. The passenger stands handcuffed as Frank and his supervisors look on.
How do you know those were for his mother-in-law?
Well, if he's married, where's his wedding ring? And if he's divorced, who in their right mind still talks to their mother-in-law? I'm sorry, I mean, but really, no offense to mother-in-laws.
Sir.
Yeah.
Judge pulls Frank aside.
Sir, we have a situation upstairs.
Well, it's going to have to wait.
This won't wait.
Upstairs.
When the 912 from Toronto landed, they found four prescriptions without an MPL. They tried to take the pills away from him, and he went nuts. There he is. We think they're for his father.
Several officers face a bearded detainee. The distraught man holds scissors to his own neck.
Yes, sir. All right. We're here to help you.
Okay, okay, okay.
All right. We're here to help you, sir. All right. Give him
help. Stop.
We're here to help. Where's he from?
He's from Russia.
Okay.
Now, the only interpreter we got is in Newark. He'll be here in an hour.
Okay, we've got to find somebody to talk to this guy.
I have an idea, sir.
Frank enters the detention room and finds it empty.
Victor? Victor?
He pokes his head out from a stall.
I need your help.
Victor rips off some toilet paper. Later.
His name is Milo Dragovich. He lives across the border from you. He may not speak exactly your dialect or whatever, but I need you to translate and help me out of a jam.
Sure. I help you? Why?
Because I don't want anybody to get hurt, Victor. This guy's very upset. Just talk to him and calm him down, all right? You do that, and I'll let you back in the terminal.
No, New York. No red stamp. Green. I green to New York.
Okay, yes.
You say yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Okay. 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 Mr. Milo Dragovich, we have somebody here to talk to you.
Stay out.
Somebody to talk to you. Go ahead.
Stay out.
Okay.
Spokojno. Ми
сме от тях. Сме живе тук. Нали говориш руски?
Ну я руски!
Спокойно, спокойно, не съм от тях. Съм живия тук.
As the man calms down, Victor faces Frank.
So?
Okay. Tell him, in order to export medicines from this country, he needs to have the proper form. He needs to have a medicinal purchase license. Okay? You understand me, Victor?
Не може да изнесеш лекарството без документ. Тези казва, че нямаш документ.
Понимаешь, батя заболел. Он вот такой мужик вообще. Он 72, но держится, как кремень. Все сам делает. Крышу, все сам. Дрова рубит. Понимаешь? Заболел. 6 лет назад такое же было. Ничего не помогало. Вот только из Канады лекарство помогло. Видишь? Это канадское лекарство.
The detainee reaches inside his shirt. He takes out more prescription bottles and hands them to Victor.
This is why he go to Canada. This one, for medicine,
all right,
for father.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. His plane landed in the United States. Uh-huh. He needs to have the right form.
Okay, okay. Самолет идет в Штаты. Треба да спаживаш технический закон.
Откуда я знал, что такие законы? Если он доктор мне продал, ну должен был дать какой-то документ. Я бы его взял и все.
He did not know that he needed document. No one said to him he needed document for the form.
Well, I'm saying it to him. He needs to have the form signed by the local hospital who's treating his father and a doctor in Canada. These medicines have to stay in the United States now that they're here. They have to stay here.
The detainee glances toward Frank, then stares pleadingly at Victor. Victor shrugs. The detainee drops to his knees in front of Frank and holds his hands together.
He's begging you.
I know, I can see that he's begging. I can see that. I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to take a flight in the morning. The medicine stays here. I'm sorry.
He drops the scissors. As the officers pin him to the ground, Victor stares at Frank. They lift the handcuffed man to his feet.
All right. Thank you, Victor. Good job. Thank you. Let's go.
As two officers drag the detainee away, Victor glances from them to the pill bottles.
Hey. Got.
What?
Got. The medicine is for goat.
Goat?
Yes. Medicine is for God. Yeah, God.
He said that?
Yes. He say we not understand. I not understand God.
Wait, what are you saying? You misunderstood him. That the medicine is not for his dying father.
No. The name for a father is sound like God. I make mistake.
Frank glances at the sobbing detainee, then smiles at Victor.
Why are you doing this, Victor?
Medicine is for good.
No, it's not.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. You've been reading the immigration forms, the blue one.
Blue?
Yep, blue.
Blue?
Blue, the blue form. The one that says if it's an animal, he doesn't need the medicinal purchase license. Oh, you know it. No, then he can just bring the drugs in. It's very good, Victor.
That's
very good. Why are you doing this? Huh? You don't know him. You don't know the rules. Look at me. I was going to help you. Now, I want you to ask him. Not you. I want you to ask him. I want to hear him say it. I want to hear him say who the medicine is for. Please, who the medicine is for.
The officers bring the man closer.
Искут знает за кого лекарство.
Victor shakes the bottles.
Answer him, Mr. Milodragovich. Who are the pills for?
The detainee stares wide-eyed at Victor, his lips trembling. Victor gives a slight nod.
Okay, the pills stay. He goes. That's it.
The officers push Milodragovich backwards down the hall.
Take it easy. Come on.
Goat.
Frank stops in his tracks.
Medicine for goat. Medicine for goat. Medicine for goat. Medicine for goat.
Give him the pills.
As the officers unlock his handcuffs, Milodragovich falls to the floor. Scrambling to his feet, he embraces Victor. As the man kisses Victor's cheeks, Frank looks on smugly. Pill bottles in hand, Milodragovich kisses Victor's forehead. Victor happily watches him leave.
You love that goat.
Frank pins Victor against a copy machine.
Do you think this is a game? Huh? Do you think I need an excuse to put you back in that cell to keep...
Copies of Victor's hand fill the tray.
You go to war with me, and you go to war with the United States of America. And then you will know when that fight is over why the people of Krakosia wait in line for cheap toilet paper while Uncle Sam wipes his ass with Charmin 2-ply.
Frank's superiors look on. In a locker room, Gupta addresses dozens of co-workers who listen attentively.
There was a 20 man. Immigration gun was drawn. The Dixon was ready to fire to kill the little man with the pills. But then someone walks into the room and stands in front of this little man put the guns away. The man said, nobody will die today.
Who? Who was it that saved him?
Gupta steps toward his janitor's cart and holds up photocopies of Victor's hand.
Nowoski, Victor, the goat, Nowoski.
Now, as Victor enters the food court, four Panda Express servers behind the steam table grin broadly at him. He offers a curt nod, then notices two ice cream shop workers smiling his way. A photocopy of his hand adorns their freezer case. Walking past Baja Fresh, Victor shifts his gaze beyond the grinning workers and sees another photocopy taped to a rack. Further on, an Auntie Anne's pretzel employee salutes him. Elsewhere, a message scrolls on a monitor. Terminal of the year, 3 years.
Doesn't look good, Frank.
I was just following the rules.
Sometimes you have to ignore the rules, ignore the numbers, and concentrate on the people.
People, yeah, I know.
People, compassion, Frank. That's the foundation of this country.
I know. Yeah.
Richard takes Frank's arm.
You could learn something from Nowoski.
The protege averts his gaze.
Cheer up. Not over yet.
Richard steps away. Now Frank sits in his office, his feet up on the desk. Outside, a short-haired woman knocks on the door. As Frank looks up, she pulls Victor into view. He raps on the glass. Frank heaves a sigh. Victor hauls the sailfish into view and smiles over its tall dorsal fin. Frank wipes his lip and begrudgingly gets up. Removing his glasses, he opens the door. Victor edges his way inside.
Is that for me?
Yes, yes. He's a virginal sailfish. For you.
Frank paces past his wall-mounted trophies.
For wall. This is for wall.
He sits back down. Averting his gaze, he puts his feet up on his desk.
Why do you want to go to New York, Victor? And what's in the can of peanuts?
The Krakosian shifts on his feet.
Promise.
A promise?
Yes.
In the
yes,
can?
Yes, promise. Yes.
Let me make you a promise, Victor. And this is a promise that comes from a man who is stuck here. A man who may be stuck here for the next 10 years.
Swiveling around, Frank meets Victor's gaze.
From now on, you and I are partners. If I stay, you stay. You will not set one foot in New York City. Not a single toe in the United States of America. Do you understand what I am saying to you?
Victor's brow furrows.
Yes. You don't like fish.
He braces the trophy under his arm, snout pointed downward, and heads out. As the door swings shut, Frank stares piercingly, then turns away. Now in a men's room, Victor shaves before a mirror. Beside him, a portly businessman does the same. They slosh their razors in neighboring sinks, then draw them down their lathered faces.
You ever feel like you're just living in an airport?
Victor freezes. Now Joe picks the lock on a door marked United.
You know, we don't have to do this, Victor. I can ship you out in a crate. I can literally mail you anywhere in the United States.
Hey, what about my food cart? He can hide inside and we'll drive right out the front.
No, I can't do this.
Victor, I thought you said you wanted us to help you.
I do.
Okay, well, what's the name?
Amelia Warren.
I thought we were looking for a way out, not a way in.
Okay, here.
You better be careful. You know, those flight attendants ain't like regular women, Victor. You know, they're flying back and forth between all those time zones kind of messes with their biological clock or something. They're always ready for sex. Why do you think they can't stop smiling?
Okay, I found something.
I'm leaving.
Gupta lingers in the doorway.
They will come for us.
Gupta, will you relax? Just go out there and watch the door.
You go in jail. Not me.
Flashlight in hand, Enrique thumbs through a file cabinet.
Warren, you said, right?
Yes.
Warren. Amelia Jane Warren?
Oh, Jane.
Yes.
They huddle around Amelia's file.
Ooh, way to go, Victor, first class.
When she come, Vic?
3 weeks.
Now Victor strides through the transit lounge, grinning. At the Hugo Boss boutique, he makes his way to a window display where a headless mannequin form wears a sport coat. Facing the glass, Victor matches the dressed form to his body's reflection. The display's coat obscures his own frumpy jacket, and the reflection of his head lines up with the outfit's shirt collar. He checks himself out, twisting his head this way and that, and frowns. Moving on, he stops before a long, heavy tweed coat, eyes his reflection, and frowns. A third mannequin's outfitted in patent leather shoes and a sleek dark suit. Victor admires his reflection. Licking his lips, he gazes coolly.
Milia, would you like to get it to bite?
His eyes shift.
Bite to eat? Cantalone?
Now he steps out of the boutique holding the suit. In the front window, a headless mannequin stands stripped. In a restroom, Victor wears the suit and shoes as he looks into the mirror. He slaps some aftershave on his cheeks. He shakes his head and waves his hand. His expression sobers.
Bite to eat. Bite to eat. Bite to eat.
Now in the transit lounge, Victor sits near Gupta on a seat unit. He leans toward the janitor.
Gupta, you been ever married?
What did you say?
You been ever married?
I had a wife and two kids in India. I left them there 23 years ago.
Why?
I had a small tobacco shop in Madras, made just enough money to survive. One day, this policeman comes in and tells me I owe him some tax. I say, okay, this is common, so I pay him. But the next day, the same policeman come and keep coming, and I'm paying him. And finally, on the fifth day, I take a knife and I stab him in his chest.
You killed policeman?
No, I just missed his heart. When they tried to arrest me, I just run away.
So you never go home?
Oh, if I go home, I go in the jail for 7 years.
Victor shoots a furtive glance over his shoulder.
What if United States catch you? They deport you?
As long as I keep my floor clean, keep my head down, they have no reason to deport me. They have no reason to notice a man like me.
Gupta holds his head high.
United Airlines Flight 2703 from Rome, Italy is now arriving at C-43.
A half dozen flight attendants enter the terminal. As Amelia strides into the transit lounge, Enrique parks his motorized cart, blocking her path.
Sorry.
As she changes direction, Gupta holds up his mop, barring her progress.
Wait.
As she stalks off around the seats, Joe cuts her off in his electric vehicle.
Hey,
will you watch where you're going?
Watch out!
Backing up, she tumbles into Victor's lap.
Victor! Oh, sorry. You killed me.
As they go together, Joe plays a lick of air guitar.
Lovely suit.
Oh, Hugo Boss. On sale, $149.99.
That's a bargain.
She notices books in his hand.
Napoleon?
Yes, in Josephine.
You know what Napoleon gave Josephine on their wedding day?
Amelia, would you like to have eat to bite food tonight?
You're asking me out for dinner?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what time?
Dinner time.
Where do you want to go?
No place.
Nighttime. Amelia wears a dark long-sleeved evening dress as Victor escorts her to an upper level. They stop before a grinning Gupta who's clad in a stately Nehru jacket.
Do you have an appointment?
Navorsky.
Please.
Gupta pushes open frosted glass double doors, revealing a patio overlooking a runway. An elegant table for two sits on the polished floor. As Gupta helps Amelia into her seat, Victor seats himself.
I didn't know they had a patio up here. Very nice.
Joe arrives, clad in a dark vest and bow tie, and activates a long-handled lighter. Holding it over his crooked arm, he lights a pair of candles. As Joe passes behind Amelia, he mouths the words, "She is so hot." Victor rolls his eyes. As Joe steps away, Enrique approaches.
Good night.
Staring at Amelia, he distractedly fills her glass with red wine.
To
please, please, please.
Victor takes the bottle and glass.
So tonight we have cannellonis or chicken?
Cannelloni, please.
He nervously lays a napkin on her lap.
Sorry. For you, sir?
Sam.
That's a great, great choice. Luck.
Enrique drapes the second napkin over Victor's arm. Now Gupta returns, juggling three large rings. One by one, he places them around his neck, then bows and leaves. Enrique returns and drops a croissant into each diner's salad bowl.
See. Enjoy.
Another croissant was invented in Romania.
Tell me.
Okay. It's 1742, and the Turks invade Bucharest, making a surprise attack under the cover of night. But the town bakers...
Amelia opens her handbag and checks her pager. Gupta returns with several plates. He spins one vertically atop another's underside, then another and another. He drops a dish. As Victor's gaze shifts uneasily, Gupta makes his way back indoors.
So, the bakers?
Oh, never mind. It's a dumb story.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Victor. Nobody really cares where the croissant was invented. I bet the Romanians themselves don't really give a shit.
I care. History is truth.
I'm 39 years old.
No.
Yeah?
No.
That's the truth.
You are not.
Mm-hmm. I tell everybody I'm 33, and most of the men I've dated think I'm 27.
Oh.
No, I'm 39.
So I was 39 once.
I was 18 years old when I started working for the airlines. I've been doing this over 20 years, and now there's no more pretending. This is it. That's why my address book is alphabetical by city, and my pager will always go off during dinner.
You can switch off, pager.
I wish I could. I've been waiting for a phone call for 7 years. I know it's coming, Victor. That's why I can't break it off. That's why I live out of hotels and have my little suitcase packed, ready to go, just in case he wants to meet me for the weekend. Yeah. I've been waiting my whole life.
Blinking, Amelia smiles wistfully.
Just to know what the hell for.
She lays her hand on the pager.
I'm so sorry.
She stands and crosses the patio past Gupta, who now spins a half dozen plates on tall rods and a trio of dishes on a tabletop. Victor follows his dinner companion to a railing where she leans, fidgeting with her beeper. He stands beside her, below travelers mill about the terminal.
I live here.
What?
I live here, in terminal, gate 67.
You live at the airport?
Yes, day and night. He's home, like you. They tell me to wait, so I wait.
He shows her his pager.
All frequent flyers feel the same way you do, Victor. Everybody's waiting.
No.
Everybody. For a flight, for a meeting.
No. I don't wait for a flight. I don't wait for a meeting.
What are you waiting for?
Amelia stares gravely at her pager.
He's okay. I understand.
Her eyes flash and a sly smile crosses her lips.
I have an idea.
They return to the patio.
Here.
What you do?
Ripping her pager, she winds up like a pitcher.
Are you sure?
More than anything, I'm sure of this, Victor. Ready?
They hurled their pagers onto the runway below. Victor slaps the railing. As he raises his hand, Amelia gives him a high five. Later, they make their way back through the transit lounge.
So when do you come back?
13 days. How about you?
I will be here.
But, what if your schedule changes? Maybe we should exchange phone numbers.
No. I will be here. You know what Napoleon gave to Josephine when he went Bavaria?
Tell me. Oh, come on, tell me.
I will show you. 13 days from now.
Near a security camera, Victor offers his hand. Amelia kisses his cheek. As she steps away, he waves. Turning aside, he nervously reaches into his suit coat and fidgets. The camera swivels, following as he walks off. Now Victor makes his way through the dimly lit unfinished terminal. He stares intently ahead at a trio of drinking fountains mounted to the dark tiled wall. Approaching the middle fountain, he presses its button and a jet of water arcs up. Victor taps on the surrounding tiles. Now clad in a hard hat, gloves, and work shirt, he pulls a fountain from the wall. Nearby, water shoots from one already removed. Later, wearing goggles, he solders plumbing. Later still, he raises a tall wooden frame to the now stripped wall. Victor lifts a colorful broken ceramic shard. He examines it carefully, then picks up another. With a flat square trowel, he plasters over the frame's wide horizontal lath. Our view sweeps past to a clear plastic tarp where Bobby and the other foreman peek through.
What's he doing?
I can't ask him what he's doing. I'm supposed to tell him what he's doing. If I ask him, I look like an idiot.
Now a motorized cart drives into gate 67. It's Enrique. As he parks, Victor looks up from his work on the wall.
Ya lo compré. Me gasté todo mi dinero, todos mis ahorros, pero me da mucho miedo dárselo.
Wide-eyed, Victor gives a puzzled twitch.
I'm sorry. Sorry. Please, you gotta do this for me. I promise you're gonna get really fat with all the food I'm gonna give you.
Enrique please, gets down on one knee.
For me, it'll be the last thing I ask you to do.
Now at the CBP counter, a hand stamps a form denied. Another hand places a square jewelry box over the form and slides it toward Torres. It's Victor gazing expectantly at her. As she opens the box, the stone from a solitaire ring gleams. A grin spreads across her lips.
He waits for you to answer. That Sabato.
Settling into her chair, Torres eyes Victor, who wrinkles his brow.
I have to work.
He will wait.
Later, in the nearly empty food court, Enrique sits outside the pizza place. Torres's upside-down reflection appears in the gleaming tabletop. As the food service worker stares off, sipping from a Sbarro cup, the officer remains behind him. He turns and meets her stoic gaze. Torres raises her left hand, palm out, and makes a V-shape with four fingers. It's the Vulcan greeting for live long and prosper. A shiny ring's underside glints on one finger. She turns her hand, revealing the engagement solitaire. Torres breaks into a broad smile. Now a terminal sign reads Chapel. Clad in a tuxedo, Enrique drives his motorized cart. Beside him, Torres wears a wedding dress. Just married signs hang from the front and back of the vehicle. The bride tosses a small bouquet toward cheering airport workers. The crowd parts, revealing Victor clutching the flowers. He lifts his arms joyfully, spilling a shower of rice from a cup onto the floor. Now, as passengers fill the terminal, Amelia approaches customs dressed in her uniform.
How was your flight?
Good. Thanks.
Passport in hand, she walks straight into Judge, who stares gravely. More guards surround her.
Something wrong?
You'll have to come with us, ma'am.
Oh, you gotta be kidding. I come through here twice a month.
Please follow me.
Supposed to be meeting somebody.
Our view sweeps up to the surveillance room where Frank gazes down, his hand resting on a railing. Now clutching the fresh bouquet, Victor stands waiting outside gate C-43. As flight attendants file past him, he grins politely. Shifting on his feet, he cranes his neck and peers toward the gate. No one else exits. Now with Frank.
In my line of work, there are three things that matter. The person, the document, and the story.
Amelia sits in the surveillance room.
Find the truth of one, and you find the truth of all three. I need your help finding the truth.
Frank sits and faces her.
Do you know a man named Victor Navorsky?
Yes.
Judge looks on.
Do you know why he's here, where he's from?
No, we're just friends.
Have you noticed that he hides a can of Planters dry roasted peanuts in his bag?
So?
Well, what do you make of that? I mean,
I'd make peanut butter, I guess.
Well, we know that he's planning to go to the Ramada Inn on Lexington. Has he told you why he's in New York?
No.
Has he told you where he lives?
No, he just met at the airport. All I know is that he's a building contractor living out of a suitcase. That's it.
He's a contractor?
Yeah.
That's what he said?
Hmm? Frank smiles.
Amelia.
He leans closer.
I'm just curious. You are the kind of woman who can get any guy she wants.
Amelia meets his intent gaze.
Why Victor Navorsky?
She swallows.
That's something a guy like you could never understand.
Now Victor carries the small bouquet, blossoms down, and holds his jacket draped over his other arm. He enters gate 67. In the dark waiting area, he stares gloomily out at a jumbo jet rolling across the airstrip. As bright headlights illuminate the room, Amelia comes into view behind him, gazing at Victor.
I guess you missed your flight again.
Victor turns quickly.
Or maybe you have it. A really bad travel.
Please.
It's okay, Victor. All men lie. At least you're not very good at it.
I did not lie.
You told me you were delayed. You never said it was for 9 months.
Victor gestures with the bouquet.
Maybe you see the men the way you want to see the men.
So what am I seeing?
She tosses the flowers down.
Who are you? Unacceptable?
Yes.
You want to hear the funny part? I broke up with him. I was coming here to tell you that he's out of my life. I'm free. I got tired of waiting. At least we had that in common.
Amelia starts to walk away. Victor catches up with her.
Amelia, you know what Napoleon gives to Josephine when he wins Bavaria?
She stops and gazes at him.
No.
I show you.
He leads her toward the wall where the drinking fountains once stood. Soft light illuminates a tarp curtain. Victor motions to a cushioned seat facing the hanging tarp. Amelia stays standing as he yanks the tarp down. He unveils a sparkling mosaic of colored tiles and glass arcing over a large glittering basin.
That was a gift. Napoleon to Josephine. 1,000 fountains.
You built this for me?
Sit. Don't get wet.
As Amelia sits, Victor turns a faucet on the wall. The flight attendant gapes at the shimmering installation, then glances at Victor, who kicks a lower basin's wall.
Oh, it didn't work. It should shoot. Big water, up to ceiling.
Amelia stands.
Just tell me the truth. Did you escape from an institution?
She backs away from him.
Huh? Are you a criminal?
Amelia gazes at his makeshift bed and nightstand.
You're living here, Victor. You're living at gate 67. I just want to know why.
I assure you.
Victor reaches under his mocked-up bed and pulls out his carry-on bag. He unzips it and removes the planter's nut can. He cups it tenderly in both hands, then holds it up to Amelia's puzzled gaze.
My father.
Oh, God, Victor, please tell me a father isn't in that bean again.
Victor sets the can on a small table and snaps off its lid with a penknife. He unfolds a magazine clipping.
This is jazz.
The clipping shows a group photo of mostly African-American people posing on the steps of a stone building. Amelia takes it.
My father, Dmitry Sinov Navorsky, see this photograph in Hungarian newspaper, 1958. He say he look at photograph for 7 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Who are they?
Oh, Count Basie, Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, Sonny Rollins, Art Blakey, Max Kaminsky. 57 of them all together. After looking at photograph for 7 days, my father, yes, I did. He began to write letters to club New York, Ligeti Split, Snooki's Sugar Bowl. He asked the nuns to write English hundreds of letters. And then he waited. He waited month, week, year. My father waited 40 years.
Victor reaches into the can filled with scraps of paper.
And they all sign names.
He shows an autographed Lush Life ticket stub.
One by one.
He removes another slip of paper and unfolds it. He places autograph after autograph on the table, each signed on aging cocktail coasters, business cards, cashier receipts, and the like.
They all write their name and send it to my father.
Victor unfolds the last, an autographed photo of Thelonious Monk.
All but not one.
He points to a man in the magazine clipping photo.
Benny Golson?
A tall young man smiles on the top step.
Saxophone. My father died before Benny Golson write his name and sent to my father. So I'm making promise. I keep promise.
Victor stands and gazes at the clipping.
I promise I will go to New York, find Benny Golson, give him right name to Putinkin.
And you've been living here all this time so you could do this for your father?
Maybe I think he'd do it for me.
Amelia's eyes pool with tears. She peers up at him, then closes her parted lips and swallows.
You say you are waiting for something. I say to you, yes, yes. We all wait.
Amelia stares thoughtfully.
What are you waiting for?
You. I wait for you.
Amelia slowly stands and steps hesitantly toward Victor, her gaze fixed firmly on his. As the fountain mosaic glistens under a row of ceiling lights, Victor steps toward the woman. Amelia lifts her fingers to his cheeks, touching them lightly, then moves her lips toward his. An inch away, she hesitates, then parts her lips and presses them to Victor's. As they kiss in a strong embrace, the room's cavernous ceiling suddenly shimmers with patterns of light reflected on moving water. Their kiss lingers in front of the sparkling fountain. Our view pulls away across Gate 67's dark waiting room and fades to white. Daytime. Enrique, Joe, and Gupta approach, the brilliant sun flooding in behind them. In bed, Victor sits up in his pajamas and squints at them.
What?
Enrique leans close and smiles.
The war is over.
Now a TV reads, Peace in Cracovia. At a terminal bar, travelers and workers lift drinks. On a table, Victor rhythmically swings a glass of beer back and forth. Out on the polished terminal floor, Amelia slowly approaches the crowded restaurant. Grinning, she applauds with a large envelope held in one hand. Next to Victor, Joe smiles.
All right, everybody. Come on, let's raise your glasses. Let's have a toast to my friend Victor, the goat. May he never lose his country again.
Victor lifts his glass with the crowd, then spots Amelia and jumps to the floor.
Amelia, you hear Raleigh?
They hug.
Oh, Amelia. Oh, peace, the war, please come.
He points at the TV.
The war, Krakow is over. Peace, the war is over.
Amelia and Victor share an enthusiastic hug.
You know my friend?
Yes.
He works in Washington.
Yes, yes.
He has a lot of connections.
Oh.
Here.
She hands him the envelope.
It's a pass, Victor. A one-day travel emergency visa with your name on it.
Well, visa?
Yes.
For your friend?
Yeah. Just go to New York, find that last name, and put it in the can.
I go to New York?
Yes!
I go to New York!
People swarm Victor, congratulating him. Enrique gives him a kiss. Victor hugs Amelia again, then peers into her smiling eyes. His expression sobers.
You come with me to New York. Yes! Your friend? Do this for me. Why you do this for me?
Amelia's eyes well up as she faces him.
He did it for me. I told you to stay away from me, Victor. But you didn't understand. I think you were confused.
No. I'm confused about everything. I'm not confused. Not this.
What?
Come on. I'm running late.
She heads off through the crowd.
Amelia, why you go? Why you go?
You know what Napoleon gave Josephine as a wedding present? It was a gold locket. And on the inside, he made an inscription.
Victor stands motionless as Amelia backs away from him.
Destiny.
As friends and strangers converge on him, Victor knits his brow. Now Amelia wheels her luggage past a TV in the terminal.
Rejoice in the streets as well as in their local taverns. In the distance, a Caucasian flag waved goodbye from high atop the Parliament buildings.
Amelia approaches the suave gray-haired man.
Hey, baby.
They embrace and kiss.
I missed you.
Over his shoulder, Amelia's smile briefly fades. They head off. As they ride the escalator down, Victor watches from the railing outside the restaurant. Later, he carries his bags through the CBP waiting area to Torres's counter.
Next. Victor.
She lifts the red-handled stamp as he lays down his paperwork.
Hello, Dolores. How I am today.
Torres peruses the document.
What do you have here?
She smiles up at Victor.
What do you have here?
As she flips to the document's last page, she sets down the denial stamp and jiggles the green-handled stamp on its ink pad. Her smile fades.
Oh, no, it's not signed.
Torres furrows her brow.
What?
There's a one-day emergency travel visa. To validate authenticity, it needs to be signed by the supervising officer.
Nixon.
Yes.
Nixon.
Now Frank transfers pill bottles from a desk drawer to a box. Victor faces him.
The war in my country is over.
Yeah, I know. Congratulations. It's strange, isn't it, Victor? When you wait so long for one thing, one tiny moment. I had that moment today, too. You see this badge? This badge means that I was made CBP Field Commissioner. It means that my authority over the security of this airport is absolute.
He hands Victor a folder.
Your ticket and your passport.
Standing motionless, Victor accepts the folder.
It's time for you to go home.
Judge and the mustached officer who first greeted Victor stand by in the room.
Officer Whalen, will you please show Mr. Navorsky into the terminal and make sure that he does not miss his flight?
Frank packs a fish.
Goodbye, Victor, and good luck.
As Judge and Frank continue packing, Whalen escorts Victor into the outer office. Victor stops. He gazes at the one-day visa, the ticket, and his passport, then returns to Frank's office.
I think I want to go to New York City.
Frank straightens.
Don't make this difficult, Victor.
And no more unacceptable.
I told you this is over.
I go. New York.
Are you sure you want to do that?
Victor steps up right behind Frank.
I go to New York City. Now.
Frank blinks, then picks up a folder.
Part of my job as field commissioner is to get rid of undesirables. And there are quite a few.
He faces Victor.
Like this guy, Joe Mulroy. I think you know him. Joe's been here for about 20 years, but it turns out he's been running an after-hour poker game, bringing in liquor and marijuana. Poor guy's going to lose his pension. And I think he has kids, too.
Frank plays a VHS tape.
And then there's this guy, Enrique Cruz. I think you also know Enrique. Enrique, as it turns out, has been letting people into the food preparation area. That's a major security breach. The poor guy, I think he's a newlywed. But I'm going to have to let him go.
Whalen listens.
And then there's Gupta Raja. He's a janitor. But as it turns out, he's wanted for assaulting a police officer back in India in 1979. I'll have to deport him.
I will go home.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I will go home. Leave them alone, I will go.
Today?
Yes.
If you don't get on that plane, Victor, they're all gone.
Yes, yes.
Do you understand?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
Now on the departure board, information updates as the lettered and numbered cards cycle. One destination settles on Krakosia on time. Below, Enrique and Joe intercept Victor and Whalen.
I don't believe it's just...
Victor, you don't have to do this.
Victor, you can fight these guys, okay? We'll help you.
Victor, come on. I owe you so much. Please let me help you.
Victor, listen to him. This is your friend talking. Victor, we're all your friends. We're your family now.
Victor keeps walking, then spots Gupta mopping the floor. Victor stops.
Gupta, goodbye.
You tried to fool us. You make us to think you would walk out those doors that you'll fight with them. Why don't you fight?
The war is over.
Then go. Get lost. Get lost. Go home and tell them you never make it.
He throws down his mop.
You come this close to America.
He holds up two fingers.
But you don't have the courage to go from here to here.
He points to each one.
You are a coward.
The plane sometime.
Victor walks on.
You are a coward. You are a coward.
Waylon faces Gupta.
You
Gupta.
Make me sick.
What's wrong with you, man? Settle down. People looking all around, looking at me like I'm...
The guard sits Gupta down and leans in.
Look at me.
The old janitor hangs his head.
Come on, look at me.
Gupta slowly lifts his gaze to Waylon.
There's something you should know.
Now in the surveillance room, Frank wheels a chair to a station facing the monitors. He sits, balancing a coffee cup on a saucer and props his feet up on the desk. On one screen, a jet plane taxis in along the tarmac. In a waiting area, Victor sits amid people reading newspapers. One man watches a show on a laptop. It shows an actor in a fuzzy penguin costume strutting around a desk. A half dozen security guards suddenly race through the boarding gate. Victor and other curious travelers gather at the terminal windows. On the runway, the arriving jet plane taxis toward Victor's gate. Gupta, dwarfed by the gigantic plane, hobbles toward it, wielding his mop. Inside, Enrique and Joe join the onlookers. Outside, snowflakes whip down as the advancing plane turns. Gupta's old short legs trot directly toward it. In the surveillance room, Frank sips his coffee, then freezes as he eyes the monitor. At the window, Victor covers his mouth as the wheels roll closer to his friend. Joe and a growing crowd stare. As they watch, Gupta races forward, lowers his mop like a lance, and charges toward the massive landing wheels under the plane's nose. He slams the mop against the short axle, and the plane stops. Victor uncovers his gaping mouth. Joe drops his jaw. In the surveillance room, Frank freezes and stares blankly over the rim of his coffee cup. Gupta beams.
I'm going home!
Gupta waves and Victor waves back. The old janitor smiles and salutes.
Get lost!
Gupta waves toward the terminal windows. Victor smiles and salutes. Victor glances up at the departure board's information, which updates. Flight 866 to Krakosia, delayed. Victor looks to his loyal friend and smiles. Outside, a dozen squad cars surround Gupta. Guards with helmets and face masks leap from them and aim rifles. The old janitor raises his hands, dropping the mop.
Do you have an appointment?
In the surveillance room, Frank's cup shatters on the floor. He makes a call.
Will somebody please tell me what the hell is going on down there?
Victor heads away from the gate.
Right behind you.
As Joe, Enrique, and Waylon follow, the Burger King worker watches.
Victor's leaving.
The employees at Borders rush to the window. Below, workers at Starbucks head to the railing and look across the way at Victor. As he marches on, a bearded Cambridge Soundworks employee runs from his store and calls to a Brookstone clerk.
Monica, Victor's leaving.
I know, he's going home.
He's going for the front door, he's going out to the city.
What?
Monica grabs a pair of display slippers and a visor and leaves. Now, as Victor boards a descending escalator, a mob of terminal workers follows him. The food court employees race down the stairs beside the escalator and extend bags of food.
Discover store, I want to give you this little blue squishy. You squish it, it's good luck.
A digital camera for cousin.
I don't know where you're going, Victor, but these will keep your feet warm when you get there.
Victor nods as they hand him more gifts. Our view passes his photocopied hand, which hangs on a directional sign. Watching from the surveillance room, Frank picks up his radio.
Okay, everybody in position?
We're here.
That's it, secure the door.
Officers block the exit. Victor heads forward with the mob and halts before Judge and his men. As Judge gazes back somberly, Waylon faces Victor.
Sorry, Victor.
He joins the line of officers. In the surveillance room, Frank grins.
Take him, Judge.
Victor inches forward.
Hold it, Victor. Take it easy. You see those doors? Those are the entry doors to New York City, to the United States of America. Turn around.
Victor glares at Judge and turns around. Judge takes off his overcoat and approaches Victor. He drapes the coat over the Krakosian's shoulders.
It's snowing in the city, and
You're gonna need that.
As Victor glances back, Judge sighs.
Good luck.
In the surveillance room.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, no.
I'm gonna miss you.
Try not to get stuck wherever you're going.
Arrest him! Arrest him! God!
Frank slams his fists onto a desk and races out. Below, Victor faces Joe, Enrique, and Torres. With a determined stare, he turns toward the doors and swallows. As the smiling crowd watches, the freed traveler makes his way forward. Victor passes through the glass doors. As a light snow flurries through the air, he closes his eyes and inhales deeply. Carrying his luggage and the gifts, Victor looks around the bustling sidewalk. Bundled up men and women pass behind him. Victor smiles, then leans his head back. Reflected in the glass panels of the terminal's exterior wall, the New York skyline reaches majestically into the sky. At the curb, Victor signals for a taxi. As it stops, Victor puts down his suitcase and opens the back door. He glances to his side and knits his brow. Farther down the sidewalk, Amelia steps out of a cab and takes her bag from the driver. As she heads for the entrance, she spots Victor and stops. Meeting her gaze, Victor stands motionless in front of the open cab. Amelia stares at him, wind blowing gently through her hair. Victor raises his brow and smiles. She returns the smile, and he nods. Taking her bag, the flight attendant walks toward the doors, then returns the friendly nod. Now in the security department, Frank briskly walks down a hallway. He swipes his card through a panel and enters the transit lounge. As he jogs past a crowd of travelers, Victor gets in the cab.
Where do you go?
161 Lexington. Please take the Lenwick Expressway to Queensboro Bridge. It's faster than BQE.
Where are you from?
Krakosia, Victor Navorsky.
I am Goran, Albania.
Oh, when you come to New York?
Oof.
Goran shrugs.
Thursday.
Victor nods and they pull away from the airport. Frank rushes outside with officers and watches them go.
Sir, you want us to signal red, block the south exit, and have AP sweep every vehicle?
Frank grits his teeth.
Sir?
The field commissioner looks at the officer, then glances down at his watch.
5:30 from Tokyo, just landed. Got two planes on the tarmac, Barcelona on approach. The night is young and 1,500 people are headed our way.
Frank grins.
Everybody inside. Everybody inside. Come on.
Yes, go.
As the officers walk away, Frank and Judge linger briefly, staring into the distance. They turn and head inside. Nighttime. Now in Manhattan, vertical banners from an ornate high-rise read Ramada Inn. As traffic heads past the hotel, Victor exits his cab and walks to the front entrance. A uniformed doorman stands outside. Victor looks up at the building, then notices an address marker over the door, 161 Lexington Avenue. Inside, Victor approaches a clerk at the front desk.
Are you checking in, sir?
No, I don't check in. I want to go to this place, please.
Oh, the lobby lounge is right around the corner, sir. They have happy hour specials and live music every night. Do you like jazz?
Now in the lobby lounge.
So we should hear the bass all right with the cymbals.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could use
and the piano's okay.
A little bit more bass in the monitor.
A little more bass in the monitor. Yeah.
Victor walks past seated patrons and heads to the stage.
Let's do Killer Joe. It worked all right last night, so we'll try. Oh, just yes.
You are Benny Golson.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Victor grins at the saxophonist.
Benny Golson, I am. Victor Navorsky, I am from Krakosia. My father, Dmitry Senov Navorsky, was a great, great fan of your music.
Oh, jazz fan, yes, fantastic. Yes.
Would you sign your name, please?
Oh, well, I tell you, can I do it a little later? We have to get started now. Just a minute.
Oh, I will wait.
Okay.
Victor backs away, and Golson raises his sax to his lips. As the artist performs with his combo, Victor sits at a cocktail table facing the stage. A spotlight silhouettes the saxophonist on the bandstand as he plays. At the table, Victor watches, his eyes shiny with tears. Now Victor exits the hotel, gripping the planter's can. As snowflakes lightly drift down, he glances at a piece of paper under his thumb. On a flyer for the performance, Benny Golson's autograph is signed next to a photograph of the saxophonist. Victor stares intently at the signature, blinking thoughtfully in the snowy night. As men and women pass, he shifts his gaze to the street and lifts his arm for a taxi. One pulls to the curb. With his luggage and belongings in hand, he opens the back door and gets in. A balding man sits behind the wheel. Victor closes the door and opens the can. He smiles at the paper and adds it to the now complete collection. The balding driver looks back at his passenger.
Where do you want to go?
Victor shifts his eyes.
I am going home.
Smiling wistfully, he seals the lid over the collection of autographs. He lifts the can to his mouth and kisses it. Victor gazes ahead and nods. Pulling away from the curb, they head down the snowy street. Now the cab heads through Times Square. Brilliant flashing neon and electrical signs reflect off the cab's windows. Our view shifts toward the night sky. Fade to black. Now each credit appears as an autograph, directed by Steven Spielberg, screenplay by Sasha Gervaisi and Jeff Nathanson, story by Andrew Niccol and Sasha Gervaisi, produced by Walter F. Parks, Laurie McDonald, Steven Spielberg, executive producer Patricia Witcher, executive producers Jason Hoffs, Andrew Niccol, director of photography Jonas Kaminsky, ASC, production designed by Alex McDowell, edited by Michael Kahn, ACE, casting by Deborah Zane, CSA. Music by John Williams. Costume designer, Mary Zofres. Co-producer, Sergio Mimica Gazan. Tom Hanks, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Stanley Tucci, Shai McBride. Diego Luna, Barry Shabaka-Henley. Kumar Palana, Zoe Saldana. Eddie Jones, Jude Ciccolella. A Parks McDonald production, a Steven Spielberg film. Credits roll. Cast, Tom Hanks as Victor Navorsky. Catherine Zeta-Jones as Amelia Warren. Stanley Tucci as Frank Dixon, Shai McBride as Mulroy, Diego Luna as Enrique Cruz, Barry Shabaka-Henley as Thurman, Kumar Palana as Gupta Rajan, Zoe Saldana as Torres, Eddie Jones as Salchek, Jude Ciccolella as Carl Iverson, Corey Reynolds as Waylon, Guillermo Diaz as Bobby Alima, Rini Bell as Nadia, Stephen Mandel as First Class Steward, Valera Nikolaev as Mila Drogovic, Michael Nouri as Max, Anna Maria Quintana and Bob Morrissey as government inspectors, Sasha Spielberg as Lucy, Susan Sloan as Woman with Cart, Mick Scriba as Transportation Liaison, James Ishida as Yoshinoya Manager, Carlise Burke as Brookstone Manager, Stephen Fuller as Swatch Manager, Dan Finnerty as Discovery Store Manager, Anastasia Basil as La Perla employee Julie, Lydia Blanco and Joseph Davis as Burger King employees, Tanya Ivy as Godiva employee, Kevin Mukherjee as Soundworks Dave, John Eddins, Kenneth Chall, Cass Anvar, Conrad Pia, Danette McKay, Ian Finley, Jenny Kearns as CBP officers, Eddie Santiago as man on phone, Kevin Ryder as businessman, Dusan Dukic as young drug trafficker, Mark Ivanir as cab driver Garan, Matt Holland as Ramada Inn clerk, Benny Golson as himself, bass Buster Williams, piano Mike Ledone, drums Carl Allen, Scott Adsit as cab driver, Robert Covarrubias as janitor, Terry Halg as CBP inspector, Jeff Michael and Dilva Henry as anchors, Michelle Arthur as field reporter, Thin Truong, Sandrine Kwan, Carl Olachi, Tanya Van Blockland, Eveline de la Chenlier as passengers, Lori Megan Phelps as homeland security officer, stunt coordinator Doug Coleman, Victor stunt double Brian McLeet, Amelia stunt double Sandy Baruman Justice, utility stunts Alan Robinson, Frank Bear, Joey Box, Jimmy Hart, Kurt Lott, Chris Palermo, Kerry Rossall, Montreal stunt coordinator Mark Desourdis, Mr. Hanks's dialect coach, Jessica Drake. Ms. Zeta Jones's dialect coach, Joy Ellison. Bulgarian translator, Peter Badevsky. On-set technical advisor, Peter Gordon. Airport signing consultant, Bureau Mixenar, USA. Studio teacher, Lois Carl. Choreographer, John DeLuca. Assistant choreographers, Joey Pizzi, Tara Nicole Hughes. Supervising music editor, Ken Wanberg. Music editor, Peter Miles. Recorded and mixed by Sean Murphy. Orchestrations, John Neufeld. Music contractor, Sandy DeCrescent. Music preparation, Joanne Kane Music Service. Clarinet solos, Emily Bernstein. Scoring crew, Sue McLean, Brian Clements, Mark Eshelman, Greg Loskorn, Adam Michalak, Eric Swanson, Patrick Weber. Music recorded and mixed at Sony Pictures Studios. Visual effects supervisor, Charles Gibson. Photographic effects producer, Rob Yamamoto. Visual effects by Digital Filmworks. Visual effects by Digital Backlot. Digital Intermediate by Technicolor Digital Intermediates, a Technicolor company. The producers wish to thank Aéroports de Montréal, ARN, Airport Revenue News, Argentoy Laurentian's Film and TV Commission, Canada Customs and Revenue Agency, Harlem 1958 photograph by Art Kane, JFK International Air Terminal 4, Los Angeles County Fire Department, Los Angeles World Airports, Los Angeles County Entertainment Industry Development Corporation, Montreal Film and Television Commission, New York City's Mayor's Office of Film, Theater and Broadcasting, Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Rio Hondo Fire Academy, Starbucks Coffee Company, Solari, Transport Canada, United States Bureau of Customs and Border Protection, United States Transportation Security Administration, Aerial Aesthetics, Daily Grill Mural based on the artwork of Ray Turner, Film Art LA, King Kong courtesy of Turner Entertainment Company, trademark and copyright 1990 Dr. Seuss Enterprises, Friends courtesy of Warner Brothers Television, copyright 2003 Andy Warhol Foundations, ARS, NYTN, licensed Campbell Soup Company, CNN, filmed at Los Angeles, California, Palmdale, California, Mirabel, Quebec, New York, New York. Songs, Strangers in the Night, written by Burt Camford, Charles Singleton, and Eddie Snyder, performed by Strings Unlimited. Theme from A Summer Place, written by Max Steiner, performed by Starlight Orchestra. I Love New York, written by Steve Carman. Charmaine, written by Lou Pollock and Erno Rappi, performed by the 101 Strings Orchestra. The Glory of Love, written by Billy Hill, performed by Big Bill Brunzi. Something in B-flat, written by Ray Bryant, performed by Benny Golson. Drummond Man, written by Gene Krupa and Tiny Parham, performed by Gene Krupa. For All We Know, written by Fred Coots and Samuel Lewis. Killer Joe, written and performed by Benny Golson. Del Divani, written and performed by Vegan Derderian. Soundtrack available on Decca UMG. Copyright 2004 DreamWorks LLC, all rights reserved. DreamWorks LLC is the author and creator of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto, and for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Distributed by DreamWorks Distribution, LLC. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, read by Miles Neff. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. A logo, Amblin Entertainment.